There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dimensions, the Twilight Zone podcast. Tonight, we will be looking at Season 1, Episode 13, The Four of Us Are Dying. This episode was adapted by Rod Serling from a story by George Clayton Johnson, who was a man who, if you don't know who he is, he will become almost as synonymous with the Twilight Zone as Rod Serling himself. It was directed by John Brom, who will direct 12 episodes in total of the series. It was produced by Buck Houghton, and in the cast you will find Harry Towns, Philip Pine, Ross Martin, Don Gordon, and Peter Bracco. You can watch it on Paramount TV, the DVDs or the Blu-rays if you have them, and if you don't have them, I suggest picking them up, because with streaming services being the way they are today, you never know if it's going to be around or it isn't going to be around. So it's always a good investment if you want to get the actual physical media if you can. And seasons 1, 2, 3, and 5 are available on Pluto TV for free, with advertisements, of course, because it's free and you're never not going to get away from seeing advertising on anything free. The original air date of this episode was January 1st of 1960. So be aware that this episode of this podcast will contain spoilers if you haven't seen the episode. I suggest you pause it now, go take a look, come back, and listen to the rest of the podcast. So without further ado, here is Will Lasley with this week's opening narration. Take it away, Will.
His name is Arch Hammer. He's 36 years old. He's been a salesman, a dispatcher, a truck driver, a con man, a bookie, and a part-time bartender. This is a cheap man, a nickel-and-dime man, with a cheapness that goes past the suit and the shirt. A cheapness of mind. A cheapness of taste. A tawdry little shine on the seat of his conscience and a dark room squint in a world whose sunlight has never gotten through to him. But Mr. Hammer has a talent discovered at a very early age. This much he does have. He can make his face change. He can twitch a muscle, move a jaw, concentrate on the cast of his eyes, and he can change his face. He can change it into anything he wants. Mr. Archie Hammer, jack of all trades, has just checked in at 3:80 a night with two bags, some newspaper clippings, a most odd talent, and a master plan to destroy some lives.
Thank you, Will, for that opening narration. Will Lasley, everyone, my friend, who does an excellent Rod Serling impression. It's really spot on, and I love it every time I hear it. So before I start this episode, I just want to get a little bit of house cleaning out of the way. I know I have been absent for a while. That's been due to some career changes as well as moving across the country. Some of the ins and the outs have not given me the opportunity to have as much free time as I would have hoped to, you know, set aside for this labor of love, this project and hobby of mine, telling you about a 60-year-old television show. So I apologize for not being more timely with episodes. But it seems as at least for the time being, everything is evened out, and we will be back on track, regular and scheduled like clockwork. So stay tuned, because there will be more coming. I will have special guests. I will be having a lot of different things, so stay tuned. Sadly, it's just me, and sadly, I am woefully underfunded in this project because I'm the one paying for it. So, with that being said, this is a labor of love for myself, for the admiration I have for Mr. Serling, and for the sheer joy that I get from this television program that predates me by a few decades. And I just wanted to get it clear to everyone that has bothered to listen or has attempted to follow me over the last year or so that I've been doing this. I apologize for not having things done in a more timely manner, but I am working on that, and it will be in a timely fashion going forward. So, as I say, bear with me, because good things are coming, and I am excited about it, and I hope the 12 people or so that are listening to this are also excited. So now, on with the show. So, Arch Hammer, the star of this episode, so to speak, even though there are technically 4 people that star in this episode. Again, he's a 36-year-old man. Rod, when making this program, was about 36, and so all of the main male protagonists in the first season, at least, are all 36 years of age. If you pay attention, if you notice that, they're all about 36 years of age, which was the time, around this time when Rod was also around 36 years of age. And Mr. Archie Hammer has the ability to make his face change. And this is an awesome concept for a story, because there's so much can be done with it. I really appreciate the basis of this story. And I say that as a person who also says that, in my opinion, this is one of the weaker episodes of the first season. And in my mind, one of the, I'm not going to say I hate it, but I certainly don't love this episode. It's not in my top 20. It's probably not even in my top 50, to be honest with you. I don't care for it that much. I feel like it could have been done better. Maybe better is not the word. It could have been done in a different way, perhaps. But that's just me expounding my opinion, and like they say, opinions are, well, you know the rest. So Archie Hammer checks into a hotel, which roughly costs $3.80 a night, which in 1959, if you convert it to today's dollars, is somewhere around the neighborhood of $37 a night here. So we're not talking, you know, the Marriott, we're not talking the Four Seasons, we're talking Motel 6, where they'll leave the light on for you. Coincidentally, this podcast, not sponsored by Motel 6, but the price point is correct. So he can change his face, so that much we know. And in the start of the episode, he changes his face to that of a dead musician so that he can go to a nightclub, and he meets a singer who used to go with the guy whose face he took. He convinces her to run away with him to Chicago on the 1206 train. I do enjoy the scenes in the nightclub with the woman who played Maggie. I just like the whole interaction between people thinking they're seeing a dead man and Archie basically just exploiting these people to get this girl to run away with him. you know, to Chicago. I thought the whole scene was interesting. I always like to wonder, you know, what would a regular person do if they saw a person that they knew for sure was dead walk back into a room? Would it be one of those things where you look and you think you saw something, but you didn't see something, and so you look back and it's not there? Would it be a figment of your imagination? Would you think you were going crazy? Or would you investigate further? Or would you be too afraid to, for fear of finding out what the answer might actually be? And, of course, since he can change his face at will, you know, he makes sure no one actually, you know, recognizes him outside of the club as the dead singer or the dead musician. So he goes back to his hotel and he changes his face to look like that of a gangster who was actually killed and thrown into the river. He then goes to see the mob boss that had him killed, and in the course of that interaction, he goes to get an envelope of money, and of course in the ensuing scene, the gangster's goons come in and try to stop him. He escapes, only to be cornered by the same goons in an alley, where, in quick thinking and the ability again to change his face, he changes his face to that of a boxer that he sees on a fight poster hanging in the alley. He then, escaping the goons, runs into an old man running a newspaper stand. Now, he still looks like the boxer because he hadn't changed his face back. And it turns out that the old man that is running the newspaper stand is actually the father of the fighter who Archie changed his face into. The father then starts to berate and belittle and yell and scream and everything else to the guy who Archie took his face, the old man believing Archie to be that man, because he's wearing his face. And the newspaper man, the father, starts to, you know, just accost Archie with all of his past indiscretions and all the things he's done wrong in his life. And, you know, he even said at one point, you know, you did dirt to a poor girl, you know. And I always found that to be a rather ominous sort of line. I never really understood what they meant by that, and not being from the era, I mean, that could have been anything. He could have gotten her pregnant and left her. He could have turned her onto drugs or alcohol or something. There's a myriad things that could have been what was actually, what the father was actually talking about. But you never really know. So it's more left up to interpretation. But to say that saying, you know, to me, that seems like a saying that, you know, maybe isn't used today, but maybe back then was used, you know, more often and came with some sort of social or some other connotation to denote what it meant, you know. So if someone said that back then, you kind of knew what he was talking about. Whereas today, you know, the expression has been lost in our society, like so many other expressions that have come and gone over the decades, to never be heard of again. And this is one of those expressions. Or, again, me not being of the era, this could have been something that maybe nobody ever said. It was just something they had to put in due to the censors, you know, because the censors were all you know, really heavy on television programs because it was still a somewhat relatively new media at this point, and so they didn't want, you know, any minds to be corrupted by letting something slip through that they could have avoided. So if I have any listeners that were alive in the 60s, in the 50s, in the 40s, that may have known this expression, feel free to email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com and tell me what that actually meant, or email me anyway and tell me what you think it meant. Did he get her pregnant and leave her? Did he turn her onto drugs or alcohol and ruin her life? You know, what do you think he meant? What do you think that line really meant? And I hate to harp on a line, but it just seemed like a very interesting line to me. And I always found it fascinating that I never really understood what it was that he could have been referring to. And I can only speculate or guess as to what it might have been. Which, honestly, to me, I find just as fun speculating or guessing as I do finding out the actual truth. But again, I wouldn't mind knowing the truth either. So if anyone knows if that saying was actually a saying and actually used and knows what it means, drop me a line and let me know. I'm very curious. So after getting accosted by this old man that runs a newspaper stand who Archie has no bearing on whatsoever because he's still Archie, even though he's got the face of the boxer. He gets mad, he pushes the old man down, and he goes back to his hotel room. Now, when he gets back to his hotel room, some detectives come to the door and wanting to take Arch down to the station for some questioning. You know, again, in shows, especially old detective shows, old mystery shows, they always have the, you know, the usual suspects that they always round up, whether it's a burglary, whether it's an assault, whether it's drugs or mob stuff, anything like that. They always had the usual suspects that they rounded up, and Archie seemed like one of those people. So they came to him to round him up, take him down for questioning, and see what's happening. Of course, Archie, with the ability to change his face, he was able to elude the cops and escape to them in a pretty neat little sequence involving a revolving door. And he got away from them, again, using the face of the fighter, which was the last face he used, obviously, when he was talking to the old man before he went back to the hotel and the detectives got him. So as he's walking down the street to kind of get himself a little bit of distance between him and the cops, he runs into the old man again, who this time confronts him with a handgun. And before Archie could think to be able to change his face into someone else so that the old man didn't think he was actually the fighter, he had a nice little speech about family and about, you know, what you do and what you should and shouldn't do with family before he ultimately guns Archie down in the street before Archie could change his face, because he tried and he tried and he tried, but he couldn't. There was no one on the street, so he couldn't get someone else's face. There were no pictures around. There was nothing around, so he had no face to have a visual of to mimic. And he, having a gun drawn on him, kind of frazzled him to the point that he couldn't manufacture one up in his mind in order to change to. And the old man shot him while he was trying to change his face. And that would be the end of the episode. Now, at this point, I'm going to bring back my good friend Will Lasley for the closing narration. Take it away, Will.
He was Arch Hammer, a cheap little man who just checked in. He was Johnny Foster, who played a trumpet and was loved beyond words. He was Virgil Sterig with money in his pocket. He was Andy Marshak, who got some of his agony back on a sidewalk in front of a cheap hotel. Hammer, Foster, Sterig, Marshak. And all four of them were dying.
All right. Thank you, Will, for the closing narration. So let's talk about our cast of characters. Harry Towns played the titular character of Arch Hammer, the original Arch Hammer, not the changed faces Arch Hammer. Harry Towns was born in September of 1914, and he passed away on May 23rd of 2001. He had 186 IMDb credits to his name. He was born and died in Huntsville, Alabama, where he was also an ordained Episcopal priest. He got his start in on the stage and transitioned into TV, appearing on shows such as Playhouse 90, Perry Mason, Star Trek, Rawhide, and Bonanza. He quit acting in the 70s, and then, as I mentioned previously, that's when he became an Episcopal priest and quit acting to join the priesthood. But not to worry, because we will see him again in the Season 2 episode of Twilight Zone titled Shadow Play. Next in the cast was Philip Pine, who played Virgil Sterig, the mobster, one of the other faces of Arch Hammer. Philip Pine was born in July of 1920 and passed away just before Christmas in 2006. Now, he also had a fairly long career. He had 181 credits on his IMDb. His career spanned 6 decades, actually, in movies and in TV. He appeared in DOA, Rawhide, Wagon Train, One Step Beyond, and 2 episodes also of The Twilight Zone, much like Harry Towns. He acted until about a year before his death, so he was fairly active from the beginning of his career, basically until the end of his life. The next of Arch Hammer's personas was played by Ross Martin, who played Johnny the trumpet player, who wants to run away with the girl, with the nightclub singer, to Chicago. He was born in 1920, and he passed away just before the 4th of July in 1981. He had 130 credits to his IMDb. His career started in 1955 with the movie Conquest of Space. Blake Edwards actually used him in a lot of projects as well. His big role of his life was playing Artemis Gordon in the show Wild Wild West. In 1968, he developed a heart condition that was the ultimate cause of his demise. He actually had a massive heart attack while playing tennis in 1981. And the last of the four personas in The Four of Us Are Dying. Don Gordon played boxer Andy Marshak, the character who, while Arch had his face on, was ultimately the one that got shot and killed by the old man. Don Gordon was born in 1926, and he passed away on April 24th of 2017, so not too long ago. He got his first role in 1949's 12 O'Clock High, which, if you've never seen it, you should watch that movie. It's a very, very good movie. He was also in the movie Bullet with Steve McQueen, The Towering Inferno, likewise with Steve McQueen, and Papillon. He retired from acting in 1993, so he enjoyed a long career and what looked like to be quite a long retirement, so good for him. You know, obviously, none of us wants to work until the day we pass, but he certainly had a nice bit of time between the time he quit acting to the time that he passed away, so that's actually pretty good. Now, let's move on into trivia. There's actually not a whole lot of trivia in this episode, or associated with this episode, I should say. I do know that originally the character that played Archie was supposed to be the same actor that played the other three personas, and they were just going to do various prosthetics and makeup changes and everything else to accomplish the goal. But given the ability of the special effects people and the makeup people and the limited advancements that had come along by that time in the medium of television and movies, it just wasn't possible to have one person play four different roles, you know, going through the various prosthetics and all that sort of thing that would have had to happen, you know, to make the picture. So what they did is they wound up searching for three other actors that were about the same physicality, about the same size, and had different, you know, distinct voices and distinct faces that could be different from the original character of Archie Hammer. And they wound up going that way, making it a four-people role instead of a one-person playing four-people role. Obviously, nowadays, it's very common to see one person playing multiple roles. I mean, look at any movie where Eddie Murphy has been in it, or well, I mean, Eddie Murphy's kind of the king of that, honestly, at this point. I don't think anyone can eclipse him. Maybe Martin Lawrence. Martin Lawrence is pretty good at that, too. Playing the different people, but, this, you know, same person playing different people. And then, of course, Archie Hammer is 36 years old, which is how old Rod was at the time the first season was being made. So, of course, any male protagonist, if an age is mentioned, happens to be 36 years old. As with trivia in this episode, goofs in this episode are also very short, very small. There's actually really only one of note, and that is in a scene where Archie is walking down the street. There's a couple that are on a park bench making out, necking, as it would be, to use the parlance of the times. And they kind of have the camera at a very low angle, and it's looking sort of up from, like, say, the curb of the street toward the couple and toward Archie walking behind them. And you can clearly see above Archie's head the lighting rigs and the beams of the soundstage and that sort of thing. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to ignore once you see it, but once you see it, you're never gonna not focus on it when you see it again. So let's move on into the likes and dislikes category of the podcast. Now, of course, again, with everything, this is my personal opinion, and as I've already stated, this isn't one of my favorite episodes. I mean, if it's on, I'm not going to turn it off. I don't hate it, but, you know, if I want to watch The Twilight Zone, you know, I have a hankering to see it. I haven't seen it in a while. This is not going to be, you know, one of the first episodes I turn on. So, for the likes, I thought the acting was really good by the four main characters who played the different personas of Archie Hammer. I love the settings and the cinematography. I thought, you know, the different rooms, the city streets, even though you could see the lighting and the soundstage beams, you know, I'm not going to say it detracted from the episode for me, because it didn't. Because I always love, especially on The Twilight Zone, I always love when they show outdoor scenes, like on a city sidewalk, or, you know, at night someone's walking down an alley or a street. I don't know why, but I always love those atmospheric, you know, that cinematography. I always love that. And I thought the cutaways and the transitions to the changing faces was well done, and I really appreciated that. The dislikes, it didn't really grip me. It wasn't a very gripping episode, in my opinion. You know, it was actually quite simple in a lot of ways, and I don't mean that in necessarily a bad way. Certainly, there are people that love this episode and think it's in their top five. And who am I to say they're wrong, and who am I to say I'm right? I am not. It's simply my opinion, you know. But I can tell you that this story did not speak to me on a personal level, or even just a cinematic enjoyment level, from the standpoint of the way the story was done. It seemed too quick and too simplistic to me to really keep me engaged. I wish they would have been able to do more with it, or gone sort of in a different direction than they did with it. And in that sort of situation, in that sort of way, it kind of seemed rushed, and that you didn't really get much of anything in the middle of the episode to garner the payoff at the end. You know what I mean? It just didn't really, you know, just sit right with me. It didn't really excite me to watch it. And I know that could just be me. I'm sure there's people out there that love this episode, and I'm sure there's people out there that, you know, maybe they don't hate it, but they don't care for it. You know, similar to me. If you love it, write me an email. Tell me how much you love it. If you don't like it, write me an email and tell me how much you don't like it. I love reading emails when people want to tell me their opinion. I'm all for it on this program. So, and finally, I realized there were four characters, essentially one person, four characters. But there was no real character development in Archie. You know, he didn't really go through a change. He didn't really evolve. He didn't really learn anything. And maybe that was the point of the episode. I don't really know. But there was a real lack of character development in this episode, in my opinion. So, let's move on to one of my favorite parts of the podcast, and talk about what, if they were to remake this episode today, and they were to call me, if Hollywood, the entity, were to call me and say, hey, Bill, we're remaking this episode of The Twilight Zone. We know you love it. Who would you cast for each character of The Twilight Zone if we were to remake this episode? And I'll tell you, for me, Arch Hammer, and this is going to sound, you know, you may agree, you may not agree. Write me an email either way if you agree or don't agree. But for Arch Hammer, I would say Domhnall Gleeson, who recently was in the television show The Patient with Steve Carell, which, if you haven't seen it, fantastic program. Give it a look. He was very good in it, and I think he would be a good Arch Hammer. For Virgil Steerig, the mobster, I would say Bill Skarsgård, who played Pennywise the Clown in the new adaptation of It, as well as other things. But he's got that sort of menacing creepiness that I think would go well in a gangster sort of role. Now, for the character of Johnny Foster, the trumpet player who Arch played trying to get Maggie, the singer, to run away to Chicago with him, I would say Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Again, keeping in the idea that all these men that I'm naming are all physically very similar, but with different faces and different characteristics that would make them, I think, perfect for the role. And with that being said, the next two casting choices are going to seem interesting. But for me, the role of Maggie, the nightclub singer who was going to run away with Johnny Foster, of course being played by Arch Hammer changing his face, Maggie Gyllenhaal. I don't know why, I've always liked her. She's a very good actress, and I think she sort of has that look of a nightclub singer, I guess, to me. And for the character of Andy Marshak, the boxer who ultimately gets gunned down in the street, I would say Jake Gyllenhaal, because he, again, similar in body type, a little bit, a little bit different, but not super different. You know, we're not talking about Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger difference here as far as body type between the other guys mentioned and, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal. Still a very, not small person, but, you know, that sort of same build. But likewise, a phenomenal actor. Very good actor. So, he would be my cast for Andy Marshak, the boxer. Now, for the man that played the newspaper stand man, Andy Marshak's father, who in the end gunned him down in the middle of the street, I would cast Mr. Steve Buscemi, or Buscemi, or however you say it. I've never really understood it. But again, large actor in a small role. I love the idea of Steve Buscemi being just a newspaper, you know, newspaper man, newspaper seller who guns down his son in the street. I think that would be, to me, I would love to see that as an acting role for Steve Buscemi, because he is phenomenally talented and he's definitely got a very character driven and I hate to use this term because it sounds like I'm being mean, but I am no way being mean. An interesting face, and I think it would work well in this instance. And finally, for the moral or philosophy of the Twilight Zone. In this episode, I think what Rod wanted to convey, or at least in my mind, what I think, was that no matter what kind of face you put on, whether it's a happy face, a sad face, a blank face, or an angry face, you know, you have to be who you are behind the facade, you know. Be true to yourself so many times in this day and age, and so many times throughout life, you have to put on a happy face when you're actually sad, or you have to, you know, be happy when you are really angry, or you have to just have a blank face because that's the only face you can have, you know, in the given situation. And maybe, just maybe, certainly, we've all had to do that. So maybe, just maybe, Rod was trying to tell us that no matter what kind of face you put on, in the end of the day, you have to live with what's under the mask. Also, you can add to this that we just watched a program about a man that was given a very interesting, very specific set of skills, a very interesting ability, and he used it for good instead of evil, or for evil instead of good. And maybe Rod was trying to say that whatever gift you're given, be it his ability to write, be it, you know, someone else's ability to draw or to paint or to sing or to tell jokes or to, you know, whatever gift you're given, whatever talent God or whatever you believe in has bestowed upon you, whatever thing you have that is yours and yours alone that no one else has. Other people may have something similar, but they don't have what you have. Maybe Rod was trying to say that whatever you're given, use it for good and not evil. Use it to be a force of light in the world and not an agent of darkness. You know, help people instead of hurt. Give instead of take. And ultimately, if you are to give instead of take, if you are to be a source of light instead of an agent of darkness, maybe, just maybe, you can live with the face under the mask. You can live with what's behind the mask. And maybe, just maybe, you won't get gunned down in the street by a man with a gun. And so that brings this episode to a close. And as I said before, and I'll say again, and I'll say it till the end of this entire endeavor, thank you for the 12 people that are out there listening to me. Thank you for sticking by me this long. Like I said, I know I've been sort of out of it for a little while, but I'm back, and I'm back to stay. So, if you would, drop me a line at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you like. Let me know what you don't like. Let me know what you think about previous episodes or upcoming episodes. I always love to hear anything from anyone that listens to me drone on incessantly about a 60-year-old television show. Send me a line. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me you hate my face. I don't care. Send me something. Let me know you're out there. Let me know you're listening. Let me know you're enjoying it or hating it. You know, I always look forward to hearing people's opinions on things. I think it, we all need different perspectives in life on anything that we have and anything that we do. a different perspective is never a bad thing. Because, you know, if you're in a room and the only voice you hear is your own, you're not learning anything and you're not gaining any different knowledge than what you already have. And we all could use a little more knowledge. So, stay tuned for next week's episode, which is about a man who would do almost anything to protect his family, even if it means going to a different planet. So stay tuned for next week's episode, Third from the Sun, which, unlike this episode, is actually in my top 5 episodes of The Twilight Zone. And it'll probably be a long episode because I'll talk and talk and talk about it because I like it a lot. And some interesting casting choices I have also. Again, if you want to drop me a line, please do. Email me at dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, it looks like the clock on the wall is telling me it's time to go. So thank you everybody for listening, and have a good night.